How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. The Lakers Twitter get-together did not treat me well. I am tired. I am cranky. It's going to be a fun show, though, because I tend to be at my best when I'm a little cranky. Harrison, you were also there at the Lakers Twitter hangout, though I bet you felt considerably better than I do right now.
Yeah, I'm fine. I had a long day today, but on Sunday when we're recording this, but the audience, I don't think particularly cares about that. But I feel all right. I'm hanging in. I'm rallying.
You know who else looked hungover? The Lakers when they played the Wolves tonight. Third game in four nights. The second night of a back-to-back. This was never going to go very well, so I'm not really going to read too deeply into this. Before we get to the show, though, I want to remind everybody where you can find us on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLAKERS to get your $20 rebate on your first purchase using the application SeatGeek, the easiest and best way to buy tickets online. So,
and on mobile.
Yeah, online. Like, that's the internet is on both your phone and your computer.
Thank you for explaining how the internet works to me. You want to talk about the game?
Sometimes I never know these things with you. That felt like a correction that didn't need to be made.
All right, man. It's late. Let's get to the game.
All right.
I promise everybody the podcast is going to go uphill from here. I got a hot take coming for you that's going to be pretty strong. So, yeah, just be ready for that. And also, we're going to talk about D'Angelo Russell.
Yep. All right, so that's where we're going to start today. Is it time to be worried about D'Angelo Russell's production and just overall quality of play?
You know, I don't know. Like, should we be – I think it's definitely something that we should be aware of and something that we should be acknowledging because we're 10 games into the year. So while that's only a – 10th of the season, a little eighth. Over a 10th of the season. Yeah. Like an eighth of it. I'm not good at math and it's late. and so we should probably cut that, but that's okay. We'll leave it in there.
No, it's staying. Your terrible math is staying with us, my friend.
Yeah. I'll leave that in there. But so yeah, we're a little ways into the season now. And I think it's definitely time to acknowledge that Russell is not playing his best. I think a lot of us thought that he was going to break out this year. I wrote a piece before the year about how this was D'Angelo Russell's team and he was going to be the engine that made this thing grow. They were set up for him to have success. And I don't think that I was the only one that felt that way. But so far during the season, that is not exactly what's come to pass. He's averaging 15.4 points a game, which is by no means bad. He's doing it on a true shooting percentage of 51.9%, which it takes into account at threes and free throws. So that's still like decently efficient. You'd like to see it be a little bit higher, but you know, he's really had turnover. He's had turnover issues. He hasn't been, I think, distributing the ball like people would necessarily like. And so I think it's time to talk about D'Angelo Russell's struggles.
All right. So you mentioned how, you know, we saw what his game could look like at the beginning of the year, before the game, before the year even took place. And what was the term? What was the title? The engine, you know, or whatever. That
he was going to be the engine that made the team run. It looked like there were pieces set up around him to where he was kind of, for lack of a better term, and shout out to Marcelo Huertas, the catalyst. Mm-hmm. He was going to be the guy that made it all go.
So I think that while his statistical production isn't where we'd like it to be, I'm stating the obvious. All right, the assist to turnover ratio right now sits at just over 1-to-1, basically. That's not great. Nope. But I also I think a couple things are going into what's in effect right there, or what's affecting those numbers. One, when you're playing a pick and roll, it's just as often you're not going to produce the actual pass or the assist, right? Especially with the way the Lakers are spacing the floor, it creates more of a hockey assist where it's, you know, you make the one pass and the ball rotates to a corner, hopefully, and you get a corner three out of these sets. Or, you know, they're running a high pick and roll, the ball goes to Randle, and now Randle is creating the assist, right? So I think that's part of it. And then the other thing is, I think we had not a poor understanding, but I don't think we quite understood how much Luke was going to spread around the burden of producing on the Lakers, right? I don't think anybody predicted that nobody on the team would be playing more than 30 minutes a game. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And then I think also there was I won't say it's lazy because it makes sense, but there was the thought that, hey, he's just going to be this team's Steph Curry. He's going to do a lot of the same stuff that Steph Curry does. But it actually looks a lot more like, you know, a Spurs-style offense where the, you know, creativity is passed around throughout the roster. And so while it was easy and it made some sense to think he'd be this engine type of character or that was the role he was going to play, that just hasn't manifested itself, and I don't think it's going to, because, frankly, the Lakers are harder to guard the way that they're playing right now.
Yep, go ahead.
Well, and the last thing I was going to say is the way they're playing D'Angelo right now in the pick and rolls, they're going under the screen a bunch, which forces him, like, if he's going to be aggressive when they're going under the screen, it just turns into him shooting three-pointers. And I don't think that's necessarily what the Lakers are... Andrew Wiggins just banked in a three. It was that kind of night. But it was if you're D'Angelo Russell and you're trying to remain aggressive, and this is, you know, the only way that you're being defended, that makes for it's tough to balance out aggressiveness and playmaking.
Well, and that's also, I think, for lack of a better term, what some people who, you know, I guess I call box score watchers, basically, just are citing for his turnover issues and things like that, is they're saying, why don't you just take the ball to the basket, be aggressive, go make a play for others. Like, it's not that easy. When teams are giving you a shot, you kind of have to shoot it, or you can't really get that upset if he ends up getting high turnovers when he drives exactly into where the defensive coverage is when they're sagging off of him. If he drives directly into two defenders, you're going to get stripped sometimes. You're going to get tripped up. You're going to lose the ball. And so that kind of thing is going to happen. So he has to pull up for those shots, and he just hasn't really been making them. And I don't know if that's necessarily going to be how it goes going forward, but that's kind of how it is right now. And, you know, you talked a little bit about how his usage, like, he was not kind of using that many drastically more possessions than anyone else. I mean, what's kind of started, he started out the year using the most. He actually has now been usurped by Lou Williams, who is averaging 28.8% of the Lakers' possessions while he's on the floor. And then D'Angelo's 28.3. But then right after him, you have Clarkson 25.1, Randle 21.8, Julius, I'm going to go ahead and ignore Metal World Peace 20.8 because that's definitely small sample size. But then after that, you have Young 18.4. So, you know, like, they're using other guy. He's not far and away the highest usage like we thought he might be.
Mm-hmm. And again, historically speaking, with the Lakers, if there's a guy on the team who's considered or looked at as a superstar, they're going to get the vast majority of those touches, right? When Magic Johnson was on the team and Norm Nixon was still on the team, Magic wanted Norm out because Magic wanted to be the point guard any and every time he was on the court. Kobe, same thing. He or Shaq, even before, you know, or while Kobe was there, those two guys dominated the ball as much as they possibly could. And then, you know, when Kobe and Pau were here, it was Kobe had the ball for the majority of the time he was on the court, and so on and so forth. So you thought to yourself, well, if Russell is going to be the face of the Lakers, and, you know, he is the Lakers' most talented, or he has the highest ceiling of everybody on the team, then, yeah, he should probably dominate all these possessions. But the Lakers, I'm not, you know, you can't complain about Russell's low usage rate, but also then complain about the offense as a whole, because the offense as a whole has looked pretty good.
And yeah, you can't say that the offense, you can't love the offense and how much they're moving the ball and then complain that Russell isn't being used enough. Those two things are somewhat mutually exclusive.
Exactly. So, and yeah, it's they're fun to watch the way they're playing.
And they're using him in creative ways off of the ball too. They run that loop set to try and get him threes. They've been running him through elevator doors. It's been exciting to watch him not score in other ways other than just dominating the ball. And the other thing that I want to make note of is, as far as the turnovers go, he does have higher per game turnovers, but he's actually, his turnover ratio is actually lower than Mozgov's, lower than Randall's, lower than Tarik Black's, lower than Jordan Clarkson's. And so, you know, the turnover thing, I think, is to some degree a little bit overstated.
Yep, absolutely. So, look, it's also
lower than Jose Calderon, who is turning over the ball on 37.1% of his possessions while on the floor in a small sample size, which is just, that's my favorite stat of the year. He actually cut that in his time on the floor today.
Good
it
job.
Was higher.
Good job.
Yeah, so good Jose. Good job, Jose.
We're going to talk about Jose Calderon and Marcelo Huertas a little bit later. But before we get to that, the next guy on the list, unless you had anything else to talk about, Russell, you want to tie a bow on the conversation. Pretty much, there's reason to be worried, but I also think a lot of the stuff that he's doing wrong is extremely fixable.
Well, hold on. Let's define worried really quick. Like, worried about what? I think worried. I'm still not worried about his long term future at all.
Oh yeah.
I think as far as him, I think you can be. You can adjust. I'd say you have to adjust your expectations for the type of year that he's going to have. It's not necessarily going to be as explosive of a breakout year, at least from a box score standpoint, that I think a lot of us that were kind of pegging him for. But I still think that, you know, if he cuts down on the turnovers a little bit, you know, his shooting, say, like his shot starts to fall a little bit more. He's had a couple times where he's just doing this weird leg kick thing when he's when he's rising and firing on his jumper. He needs to go straight up, but I mean, other than that, like, if he gets a couple of these things in line, he could still be very good this year.
And the other thing too is, like, we can reevaluate our expectations for him this year, but that's not to say next year he takes on a heavier burden when he's a little bit more ready for it. Like, I'm a Vikings fan, and this year was supposed to be the year that Teddy Bridgewater was going to carry a significant burden of the offense's expectations. Now, it just so happens that before the season occurred, his leg fell off without real explanation.
I think that was the medical diagnosis, falling off leg.
No, it was detached. Like his below the knee, it was they had to save his leg.
Ah.
Yeah. Without contact. Vikings. You do your thing, Vikings. But
man, I can't keep doing the podcast. Are you? Oh,
anywho, Harrison's not feeling well. We might lose Harrison. The point I was going to make was, this is the year. This was supposed to be the year that Bridgewater would step up and carry a larger burden after, you know, kind of being brought along a little bit more slowly than people were ready for next over the last couple of years. Harrison is struggling.
Like, are you, you're, no, I don't tell me any more about what happened. I don't want to hear it.
This year, I think, is going to play out a lot like D'Angelo Russell's season, that is going to play out a lot like Teddy Bridgewater's season last year, where they kind of brought him along, and if next season Russell takes the steps forward and his leg doesn't fall off, he's able and willing to take a step forward and carry a larger burden, then we can start, you know, we can reevaluate him back to maybe our original expectations, and he'll be ready to carry those expectations. But for right now, while he hasn't played great, we also can't grade him based on expectations that we really shouldn't have had, now that we have the benefit of hindsight to be able to say, yeah, we shouldn't have had the expectations that he was going to be this Lakers team's version of Steph Curry, because he's not going to be that this year.
Yeah, well, first of all, prayers up to Teddy Bridgewater, but
yeah.
Second of all, I think it would be really dumb to stubbornly sit on our expectations and be like, all right, well, D'Angelo didn't hit those, so this year's a failure because we had these arbitrary idea of what he was going to do before the season. Like, we had a lot of arbitrary ideas for how guys were going to look before the season, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you thought Randall was going to be out of the league by the end of the year, I think. No, okay, you didn't. But no, it goes to illustrate my point, right? Like, all the stuff that we thought during the summer, like, it doesn't always necessarily carry over. And you can't judge a guy based on your prior expectations for him. You have to adjust those as the season goes on. Mm-hmm. And so he can still have a successful year. It's just not necessarily going to be in the way that we thought it was going to be successful.
Right. So, yes, what you just said was perfect. Let's go ahead and move on now to the next scene to come out from the game. So basically tonight, I drove to Marina Del Rey when I didn't have to drive to Marina Del Rey. So I listened to the vast majority of the game on the radio, and two things stuck out to me. Three things. One,
first, friend of the show, John Ireland, did a great job on the play-by-play.
Okay. Four things. but the first thing that stood out to me was last year, the last time I listened to a game on the radio, it was a possession was basically Kobe brings the ball up the court, Kobe dribbles around for 17 seconds, Kobe shoots the ball with, you know, 5 seconds left on the shot clock. And that was, you know, John Ireland's job is significantly harder right now because the Lakers are actually moving the ball. So that was the one thing that kind of stood out to me. The next thing that I noticed was whistles. It was whistles galore, right? So
Tonight's game was brought to you by the song Blow the Whistle.
Yeah. I don't know what that is, so I'm just going to laugh awkwardly.
That's a song, but you're old, so I think most of our audience will get that one.
I hope so. But that was the second thing that I noticed. And then the last thing that I noticed was Michael Thompson was consistently, you know, patting Nick Young on the back for saying, hey, that was a good challenge. Wiggins just made a good shot. And I tweeted out after the game that the Nick Young is the Lakers' best perimeter defender angle or narrative kind of took a hit tonight. And I know Drew, our editor-in-chief at Silver Screen and Roll, took issue with that analysis. And it sounds like you did, based on the conversation that we had before we went on the air.
Yeah, well, for one, I mean, I'm shocked that you didn't have a coherent takeaway. You didn't have a coherent understanding of how someone was playing defense without watching it. So, no, I mean, Nick Young, he's Nick Young. He's trying hard on defense. I agree with a lot of the time he did have good contests. I wasn't aware that the new CBA went into effect this year and that there was a new rule that every time Andrew Wiggins drives to the basket, he gets a foul call. But that was kind of a weird thing for the Players Association to sign off on. But hey, I mean, it was certainly good for Andrew Wiggins tonight. I think he went to the line, what, like 22 times?
I think that's what the number was.
Yeah, it was like you didn't watch the game. So it was basically if there was a Laker in his vicinity, he was getting a foul call. And hey, he deserves credit for continuing to go to the basket every single time, knowing that that's how the refs were calling the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not saying that there's some grand conspiracy that the refs were out to get the Lakers. I just think they did a bad job tonight. And I don't think a lot of people would really disagree with that. But
he went 17 of 22 from the free throw line tonight.
Yeah. Okay. So, 22 free throws, that's a lot. He ended up having a career high, I think, 43 points.
I went out of the window already. But yeah, it was around there.
All right. Yeah.
I know it was 47, I think.
47 points. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I think Wiggins was, you know, he was very good tonight. I thought Young was okay on him defensively. I don't think that he was. I don't agree with that narrative. So it's hard for me to say that it's dead. The whole Nick Young is the Lakers' best perimeter defender. Or I guess even if I do agree with it, it's just very faint praise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be true, but it's not saying much.
Right. Yeah.
It's like saying that I'm a top two host on this podcast. Like, yeah, it's a compliment, but how much are you really saying?
That's a fair point. You know what? That should go on your profile. Top two hosts of Locked On Lakers. But here's the thing. The starting point of this conversation, and it was a tweet that I sent out from my phone after being annoyed having driven to Marina Del Rey without having to drive to Marina Del Rey and missing a dinner reservation tonight in Dana Point, which is not, turns out, Marina Del Rey. So I'm sitting there and I see that Wiggins posts a career high 47 points, and I quote tweeted it with, looks like the, I forget exactly what I said, but it was basically the conversation that we're having right now. Now here's the thing. The Lakers signed Luol Deng to $72 million this offseason. And if they're trying to get Nick Young's trade value up, it's a really cynical way of running a Laker or running a team. But, you know, you have to get trade value where you can get it. My thing is, the Lakers have shown a proclivity for winning fairly well this season. And if that's the case, if it looks like, you know, the Lakers are actually capable of winning basketball games, why not continue to try to win basketball games? And if Luol Deng is, I think Luol Deng is a better defender than Nick Young is, or Brandon Ingram is a better defender than Nick Young is, why not use those guys at you know, what they're more capable of doing than Nick Young is capable of doing? So I was mostly pointing out that I'd like for this thing to go away. I'd like for this Nick Young as a Lakers top perimeter defender thing to go away, because if its sole purpose is to get Nick Young's trade value up, then I don't know what kind of message that sends to the rest of the team of, hey, as soon as you start showing that you can do stuff beyond what we actually think you're capable of, we're going to send you out the door anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if I totally agree with all that. I don't think it's solely to pump up his trade value. I think that's a part of it. I think that another part of it is that I think it fires up Young, and I think it's a good way to pump him up, and it's a good way to focus his attention on another way that he can help the team and expend his energy and things like that. So I think it is to some degree a pump up tactic from Luke Walton as well.
Okay, but couldn't other people on the roster be pumped up? And as somebody is dropping, Wiggins essentially dropped 50 tonight. As he's doing that, do you need to continue? Is that really doing much to pump up Nick Young in the midst of that actually occurring?
Well, that game, I mean, I don't know. It just wasn't entirely his fault. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that that was deflating for him to get 47 points dropped on his head.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, again, we could have the same conversation whenever the Lakers play next, which I believe is what, Tuesday?
Yes, against the Brooklyn Nets at 7:30 at Staples Center.
Right, so we could have this conversation after Nick Young goes out and plays well against, you know, whoever he has to guard in that situation. And I can look like an idiot all over again because he's Nick Young and he's been doing crazy things on the court this year. And I hope that I look like an idiot. My thing is, we have enough of a sample size over the dude's entire career to know that he's not really capable of being this kind of defender. And this science experiment is eventually, I would hope, going to run its course. And
I'd argue in some ways it's worked okay for them. I don't know that they're losing the games that they've lost. It's been because of Nick Young.
No, I didn't go that far at all. But I'm just saying this, you made an investment in Luol Deng and you drafted Brandon Ingram, and both those guys over the extent of their lives have been better defenders than Nick Young is. So continue.
I'm curious about like what your solution is then. Like, are you saying like take Nick Young out of the starting lineup and have Luol Deng and Brandon Ingram?
No, I think because Luol Deng is playing alongside Nick Young when they're starting these games, right?
Yes.
So have Luol Deng guard the other team's best scorer on the perimeter.
Have you watched Luol Deng try and guard people this year?
That's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, that's my count. I'd agree with you if Luol Deng was playing the defense that I think people expected from Luol Deng, but he's been really bad. So,
well,
I don't know. Now.
The other thing, too, is eventually we're going to see Luol Deng out of the starting lineup if he continues to play as bad as he's playing, right?
So I think he's going to end up resting.
Yes, but that would mean he's out of the starting lineup while he's resting. And when Brandon Ingram gets put into that starting lineup, and that's what I would hope is their counter move to whatever they decide to do with Luol Deng. When Brandon Ingram is in that lineup, he should be guarding the other team's best player.
And he probably would be.
Mm-hmm. And then I'd be a happy camper.
All right. I think we figured
we
it out.
The Luke,
yeah, we need to get on the phone with Luke and let him know what's going to make you happy.
Someone out there at the Lakers with this analysis, they totally pay attention to that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think Luke Walton runs that Twitter account.
Ty, where you at? We have a note. We have a note for Luke. All right, the next bit that I wanted to talk or that we decided to talk about was Marcelo Huertas and all the production he's been capable of. No, I'm just kidding. Basically, Lou Williams' ability as a backup point guard has made it to the point now where the Lakers don't need Marcelo Huertas on the roster. And he's making almost no money. So you could waive him and not feel bad about it at all. And I think that's where, when you have Anthony Brown playing as well as he's playing in the D-League, that feels...
Well, he's played one game. I think we should be clear on that. He did play very well in that one game. He dropped 38 points and made 6 of his 9 threes. So,
nice.
Yeah, he went to the line 10 times, made 8 of them. He grabbed 6 rebounds, dished 7 assists against just 2 turnovers. They should have Anthony Brown come up and play point guard.
So basically, my thing is, so long as he continues producing, and nobody's saying Anthony Brown is going to average 34 points a game this year. 38 points a game this year in the D-League.
He could average 34. That would technically be dropping down a little bit.
But if the production continues, even to like 80% of that, then the Lakers should probably bring him up on the roster, and that would mean that Marcelo Huertas finds his way elsewhere. Would you agree with that assessment so long as it continues?
And I said at the I think I played devil's advocate at the time and tried to argue for the Lakers weren't entirely insane to cut Anthony Brown and keep veteran leadership around. But I think if Anthony Brown is playing this well, then you go back to, I think what you and I really agreed on was that the Lakers should have probably kept him. And, you know, maybe there weren't necessarily a ton of minutes available for him. But that guy, like if he's playing like this, then he's worth having on your roster. And he's not going to do this at the NBA level, but he's a rotation player.
Yes.
I mean, if he's hitting his threes, that's the only thing he needed to do. The defense, if he's hitting 6 of his 9 threes, you know, down in the D-League, and probably, I would assume, a more ball-dominant role if he's scoring 38 points, then... You know, I think that then maybe his shot is starting to come around. And again, it's dangerous to make assumptions off of one game. But if he continues to play like this, somebody's going to call him up.
Which team is he playing on?
He is playing for the Erie BayHawks.
So that's the other thing that I'm not particularly thrilled about is that he is playing on it'd be one thing if he was playing for the Defenders and the Lakers could, monitor him, from basically their backyard or wherever,
They're literally their practice facility where they are every day.
So if he plays on the Defenders, then you can kind of say, hey, he's doing what he's doing, and we can call him up basically whenever we want. I don't know that they have the same. I definitely know that they don't have the same kind of presence in what was it the Bay
Erie BayHawks.
Yeah, I don't think they have a scout sitting there in Erie. Paying attention to whatever he's doing out there. So
as Julian Jacobs told me last week, scouts would prefer to come to LA. Nobody wants to go to Maine.
Yeah. No.
And Erie is not in Maine, but, you know.
That was his quote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so with if he has what, a handful of these games over the next, you know, couple weeks, it you know, he's kind of forcing the Lakers' hand to bring him up before somebody else does. Because like you said, anybody can right now.
Yep. No NBA team has his rights right now. Any NBA team can call him up.
And, you know, it's not like he's going to refuse the opportunity. It's not like he's holding out to come back to the Lakers.
Yeah. Right. No.
So he's
taking any call up he can get at this point. His career is, you know, on the NBA version of life support.
Right. So if he has a handful more of these games, he kind of forces the Lakers' hands. If they're still interested in doing that kind of thing, there's no point in having Marcelo Huertas on the roster right now. It doesn't make any sense. He's never going to play. And he seems like a nice guy, and a whole bunch of people seem to like him, and he has that catalyst.
Everybody likes him. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, he has the catalyst moniker, and that's fun and all, but for right now, you got to ask yourself what's better for the Lakers right now and long term. And, you know, we just talked about Nick Young, perimeter defender. It'd be nice to have Anthony Brown as another thing that he could, you know, that the Lakers could throw at somebody who's having a good scoring game, other than Luol Deng's aged, you know, horribly aged legs.
I believe as the Kamenetsky brothers called him, Lou Old Deng.
That's why they're better at this than we are.
Yeah, but we'll cut that part out where we admit that.
But yes, it'd be nice to have Anthony Brown as just another solution, and that would mean Marcelo sadly finds his way to the Erie BayHawks.
Well, no, I know
that's not how it works.
Okay, all right, just making sure you understand. Well, I don't really care if you understand it. I'm making sure our viewers understand, or our listeners are not being misinformed that you have to send a player back to the guy's D-League team.
That would make it more fun.
Yeah, that it'd be like the player version of relegation.
Could you just imagine, like, all right, Marcelo, we're sending you to Erie. I'm retiring.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that conversation would probably not go super well.
No, I can't imagine it would. So that's all we had on Marcelo Huertas. We talked about D'Angelo Russell, and we talked about Nick Young's perimeter defense. I already gave something of a hot take, it sounds like, talking about Nick Young. But it's now time for Harrison's hot take. So everybody, adjust your volume accordingly. We don't want to blow out speakers. We don't want people to go deaf listening to us. Harrison, are you ready for this?
Yep, I'm ready. Let's go to the sound effect. All right, Anthony, I think the Lakers are too full of themselves and they don't know how to handle victory. These entitled millennials get to 6-4. They beat the New Orleans Pelicans, who have exactly one win on the year. They beat them, like, they go on a huge run while Anthony Davis is out, and it's while the Pelicans have no other NBA players on the floor, and all of a sudden they're acting like they won the freaking Super Bowl. They're out here rapping on the team plane. Do these kids even know what it means to be a Laker? All these millennials, they just bust out their rap music as soon as they get one win.
Can I just really quick, why would they act as if they won the Super Bowl?
I don't know, Anthony. They seem to be pretty excited about this one win. You know who wouldn't celebrate a regular season win?
I'm guessing it starts with a K.
Kobe. You know why? Because Kobe knows that sports is not a game, and nothing means anything but a title. And once you win one, you have to focus on getting the next one. There's no happiness allowed in sports. They got the 6-4. That is nothing. You know how many championships you win for going 6-4?
How many?
The answer is zero, Anthony. Zero championships.
Well, wait. What if you go 6-4 over a two-series span where you had a two-game lead in the first one? You now just won the second series.
You got me there. But, oh, the Lakers beat the Pelicans, and all of a sudden they want to act like they won the Super Bowl. They're out, you know, it's just, it's insane to me, the entitlement. Everybody wants a participation trophy. These kids are on the plane. They're just like, they're rapping and they're insta-snapping the whole thing. And it's just ridiculous to me. And you know what? Honestly, I think they deserve that loss to the Timberwolves tonight. They had it coming because they got too high on their own supply.
I... my thing is, I feel like you're judging Nick Young and Lou Williams for rapping, but I think they played pretty well tonight, didn't they?
That's the Lakers' young core, Anthony. They got to show more composure than that. They got to show that they know what it means to be a Laker and to hang banners. You don't get a banner for going 6-4, well, unless you're the Pelicans. Then you do, I think. I'm pretty sure you get a banner for going 6-4 as the Pelicans. But the Lakers do not put up banners for going 6-4.
Also, if you're criticizing them for rapping, Kobe had a rap career.
That was during the offseason. Doesn't matter.
All right, good point. No, they totally had this coming. We should have seen it coming, really.
As soon as I posted that rap video on Silver Screen and Roll, I just wrote an L on the schedule. I knew it was coming. There was no way they were winning after that.
That sounds about right. You should have told me so I could have bet on
any, it. Literally any time a team is happy, you know that they're way too that there's going to be a problem because they aren't taking things seriously enough. Yeah, in sports. I know it's not a game. You are not allowed to be happy. This is very serious basketball.
Aren't they literally playing a game?
This is the National Basketball Association. You know what that stands for, Anthony?
Nope.
No boys allowed. It is a men's league.
Oh, man. The worst part is that there are people out there who are taking this seriously.
Those people should be taking this seriously. You can't get excited about going 6-4, Anthony.
Somebody's in their car right now like, I've been telling these boys. And his name rhymes with Schmeiren.
Darsnitchelo Bustle turns the ball over too much.
All right. Well, I appreciate the hot take. I completely agree. Oh, Jose Calderon just completed a pass. That's
Anthony
cool.
Anthony is, for those of you viewers who are transitioning out of hot take mode, but Anthony is watching the game on DVR right now while we're discussing the game. So you could tell the amount of prep work he puts into this thing.
Hey, there's no
he did, pressure. Hey, he did call Nick Young a terrible defender on Twitter tonight before without even watching him defend. So, hey, I admire that is conviction that hot take Harrison can get behind. That is like that's shooting straight from the hip.
Man, I'm
telling
you.
That is not aiming at all. That's just you're ready. You got a take and you're ready to fire it off.
You make an hour and a half drive that it turns out you didn't have to make and then try to tell me that you wouldn't send out a hot take or two afterward.
That's a fair point. That's how I prepare for these hot takes, actually.
You just start driving.
Yeah, just I drive in circles for 2 hours and just get really mad.
All right, so that does it for this episode, this Monday episode of Locked On Lakers. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure you're following the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Also, make sure you're using the promo code LOLAKERS on SeatGeek to get your $20 rebate on that first purchase. Keep adding us. Keep telling us when you're using this when you're using the promo code because it's just a cool, nice little thing, and we get to relay it back to the SeatGeek people and be like, yo, they're using the promo. Give us another one. They'll use that one too because we have great fans out there.
We're just trying to save all you guys money. And remember, you can please give us a review on iTunes. It helps, preferably 5 stars. And for anyone interested in advertising on the show, you can do so by emailing lakerslockedon@gmail.com.
We'll talk to everybody tomorrow. I believe we have a couple good guests lined up for this week. It's going to be a fun week of talking about the Lakers. Keep your heads up, everybody. Tonight was a – or Sunday night was a schedule loss. The Lakers.
No, I mean, honestly, Mozgov didn't get hit in the face against the Pelicans, and I think I said it at the Lakers Twitter meetup. Well, that's a loss tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, Timo, you got to put the helmet on and get back out there, okay?
Yep, absolutely. So let's make sure that happens at some point during the Brooklyn game. You're going to be there on Tuesday for the Brooklyn game.
Yes, I will. I will be in the house. You can follow me at HM Fagan for updates from the arena.
Can't wait. We'll talk to everybody soon. Shouts to Anthony Peeler.
Are we going to do a rap to celebrate a successful podcast?
Yo, give me a beat. No, nobody wants to hear that.